This is the Heartland Collegiate Compendium. Principles of Macroeconomics, Econ 10202. Lecture 26, delivered on the 3rd of December of 2008. The title of this lecture is Review for Final Exam.
Today, review for final exam. I will not spend much time on this, and there's a reason, you'll see. Final exam is 100 questions. 75, approximately 75, of those questions are going to be from exams 1 and 2. They will either be the same question or a variation with the numbers changed or possibly the opposite question. I am not here at this point in the course to find out what new things you know. The final exam is where I will find out if you know what I have taught you, if you have learned it. So I'm not asking any new material. I'm not going to probe any new ground on any question that I ask. This is, again, an exam where I find out if the objectives of the course have been met. So far, it appears that you are consolidating, at least generally, you're consolidating around an understanding of macroeconomics that I find good. And I am going to use the final exam to be sure that you know the material. From the beginning of the course to the end, I want you to know what I mean by GDP. I want you to know what I mean by inflation. And for God's sake, I want you to know exactly what the one and only one cause of inflation is. I want you to know what the CPI is, the PPI, the GDP deflator. Know what the cores mean. What do I mean by the core PPI as opposed to the overall PPI? I want you to know about the calculation of a price index, how you can get an inflation rate from an index. I want you to know about the business cycle. What do I mean by the trough, by the expansion, by the recovery? What technically is a recession? Technical measure. When was the longest sustained economic expansion in U.S. history? I want you to know the history of the presidents and their economic policies and the consequences of those policies. What does it mean to be a Keynesian? Who was John Maynard Keynes? What was the opposite? What was the school against which his economic policy recommendations was cast? The technicalities. What do we mean by aggregate expenditures? How do you use that? What does the graph look like? What's the marginal propensity to consume? What's the marginal propensity to save? What happens when the marginal propensity to consume goes up? What does that do to the aggregate expenditure line? How do you find equilibrium? If you're looking at the equations or the graphs, how do you find equilibrium if you know the shape of the aggregate expenditure line? C plus I plus G plus X minus M, and don't forget the autonomous expenditures, the autonomous consumption component in there. We've come a long way through this class because that was early on when we were talking about aggregate expenditures. What do we mean by an inflationary gap or a recessionary gap? Know how to find them. Know how to look at the graphs to see them. Know how to do the equations. These were all on the first exam. I will do that again on the final exam. You will see little graphs. I will ask you, I will say, here's an aggregate expenditure line. Look at it and tell me what the marginal propensity to consume is from that aggregate expenditure line. Where is equilibrium? What is equilibrium? How do you find it again? Make sure you know how to do that. We moved on into other parts of the course, and there are admittedly a lot of different things that we've gone through in this course, and I'm not going to be exhaustive. Look at your quizzes, look at your exams. You'll know what I'm going to ask. When I got into aggregate supply and aggregate demand, why is it that an aggregate demand curve slopes downward? And why is that not the same reason that the microeconomics equivalent of it, a market demand curve, slopes downward? The same for the aggregate supply curve. Why does it slope upward? Why is that a different reason from why a market supply curve in microeconomics slopes upward? What does it mean in terms of the graphs to be a Keynesian? What does it mean to be a classical economist? Why is the aggregate supply curve in Keynesian economics so elastic? Where does the Phillips curve fit into this schema? How was the Phillips curve used? By the way, notice what I'm doing here. Do you see the scope of this course? You have gone through a lot in this course. You have seen an awful lot. I have taught you everything you need to know to actually be intelligent in terms of economics, economic policy. By the end of this course, you could be an absolute bitch to either a conservative or a liberal, to a Republican or to a Democrat. You can look at policy objectively. There's nothing wrong with you saying, go John McCain or go Barack Obama. But at the end of the day, you have to set your political affiliations aside and do the reality check. And you have the tools to be able to do that now. Know about monetary policy. Know the details of the Federal Reserve. If need be, go back and look at that stupid-ass video again from the St. Louis Fed. What are the tools of monetary policy? What's the money multiplier? That was something, by the way, I didn't ask on this exam. I didn't hit that. On the final, I probably will hit you with a question on that I have not yet probed on the exam. So keep that in mind. I didn't do that on this exam. I was beating the hell out of you enough. By the time I was finished writing this exam, I was rather tired. When I talk about monetary policy, what are the three tools and how does each of them work? The required reserve ratio. What does that do? What's its impact? What would it mean if the Federal Reserve raised the required reserve ratio? Well, it would certainly mean that the money multiplier would fall, but why would the Fed, other than to slow down the growth of the money supply, is there any other reason that the Fed would raise the required reserve ratio? And the next one, the discount rate. Is it important? Is it something that is used every day? And again, I caution you that historically the discount rate was more like a symbol. No bank actually borrowed its money from the discount window at the Fed. Banks borrowed from each other in the federal funds market. But that's changed recently now that the Fed has turned into the candy man. What are open market operations? And I want you to make sure that you pay attention in this exam that there are two different things happening in an open market operation. There is an effect on the supply of money in the federal funds market. And that causes federal funds rates to go up and down, which moves lendable funds rates up and down. But there's also an effect on the supply and or the demand, of treasury instruments. And that causes yields on bonds, government bonds, to move around. And that, too, affects the yields that would be required on business investments. If the government is borrowing money at high rates, and the government will borrow money at whatever rate it wants, it doesn't care what the interest rate is. It'll just borrow its money. If the government is so desperate for money that it's just borrowing and borrowing, and interest rates are going up and up and up. That's going to have an impact on businesses. That's going to force businesses to offer higher and higher rates, and rates that are higher than the government's, because government is very safe investment. These businesses will have to offer even worse, even bigger rates. And as interest rates go up, private investment's going to go down because fewer and fewer projects will meet the hurdle rate. That's important stuff to know. And eventually, and we call, have even a name for it, when the government pushes interest rates up through its borrowing, that drives private investment down, that's called the crowding out effect. So, as the government becomes more and more dominant in the capital, global capital markets, that's going to make businesses, private investment, less and less important, because businesses won't be able to afford the high interest rates unless they're willing to take on risky projects. All of that is important to you, and note all of those concepts and just go back through. I know I spoke very fast here, so go back through this. This is a brief podcast, and just listen to the details and go back through your notes, through your exams, and find all the different things that I've talked about here today. Do you have any questions about the final yourselves? I'll put it up on the scrolling marquee tonight. I'm not even going to try to speculate. I think it's actually in your syllabus where... Noon on Wednesday, is it? I'll verify that and put it up on the website. Just that, but yeah, that's what I checked at the beginning of the semester to make sure. See, this was kind of a weird class starting at a weird time, so there wasn't exactly a slot that I that worked exactly. Huh? No, we are done as a happy family. And all we've laughed, we've cried, we've had our fun, and now we've got to move on with our lives. Now, some of you, I would encourage you, there's an Econ 220 course next semester you might want to consider taking. It does transfer. Others of you I will see over at the State University. And if you you see me walk into the classroom, please, for God's sake, don't run out screaming like a maniac. It'll scare the kids over there who don't know me.
You said 220
class at ISU? No, no. Econ 220 is offered by Hal Wendling here. But other than that, that's all I have for you today and forever. I thank you.